This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have a responsibility to also take care of the spiritual, psychological, and emotional well-being of all South Africans.
That South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on opening places of worship that were closed during the COVID-19 lockdown. Details coming up.
Around 40 people have been killed this week in the DRC's North Kivu and Ituri provinces. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Cameroonians are fleeing the northwestern village of Ngarbu after the military began building a base this week near where troops in February massacred at least 13 civilians. Cameroon says the base is needed to stop separatists from getting supplies in neighboring Nigeria. But as Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé, villagers fear they may once again be targeted or get caught in the crossfire.
22-year-old Cameroonian farmer Emelda Tata says she and her family were among around 100 villagers who fled Ngarbu on Sunday morning after several military trucks full of troops arrived. The troops began constructing buildings for a military base to fight off Anglophone rebels in the area. Speaking via a messaging application from the neighboring village of Ngonzen, Tata said the military's massacre in their village was still fresh in their minds.
On the 14th of February, military people entered Garbu and killed many women and innocent children. The military has built a camp in the village again, and the villagers think that this same military that was supposed to protect them, they are the very people killing them, so they have to flee to neighboring villages where they feel they'll be more secured.
Cameroonian rights groups and opposition political parties have criticized the base in Ngarbu, saying it will only increase tensions with villagers. They estimate over 300 villagers have fled Ngarbu within the past week. National President of the United Socialist Democratic Party, Prince Ekoso, says the military presence in the village is uncalled for.
Why establish a military base in Ngarbu where the military has been accused of massacring civilians, children, women, pregnant women? We are calling on the government to retrieve the initiative of establishing a military base in Ngarbu, and we call on the international community to put their eyes on this particular situation in Ngarbu. The use of force has never resolved any conflict.
Despite the ongoing tensions between the villagers and military, Cameroon authorities say the new military base is needed to stop rebels from resupplying in neighboring Nigeria. Speaking Sunday on state radio, Cameroon government spokesman René Emmanuel Sadi defended the base as a needed defense against the rebels. Although troops had killed civilians, said Sadi, most atrocities in the area were committed by the separatists.
La plupart de ces terroristes dans la localité de Ngarbu, se déguise en policier.
He said most of the rebel fighters in Ngarbu disguised themselves as Cameroon troops to commit atrocities on villagers just to give troops a bad image and make civilians hate their military. Sadi said the troops are out to protect civilians from the rebels who are stealing, raping, abducting for ransom, and making life very difficult in Cameroon's English-speaking regions. He says the troops will protect Cameroon's border with Nigeria and stop the separatists from using the border for supplies. Human Rights Watch said in April the attack in Ngarbu was part of a larger pattern of rights violations by Cameroon's military in the Anglophone regions. Cameroon's President Paul Biya admitted in April troops committed the massacre after an international outcry when authorities initially denied it. Biya ordered the arrest of troops that attempted to cover up the deaths by burning homes and filing a false report. Some 600 villagers in Garbu had fled immediately following the atrocity. The separatists have been fighting since 2017 to carve out an English-speaking state from French-speaking majority Cameroon. The United Nations says the fighting has cost more than 3,000 lives and forced 500,000 to flee to French-speaking regions or into neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South Africa has softened its coronavirus restrictions on houses of worship, with President Cyril Ramaphosa announcing last night that religious gatherings will now be allowed under strict conditions. Ramaphosa also announced a National Day of Prayer for Sunday, the day before restrictions are expected to ease across much of the country. While the nation's influential religious leaders have greeted the move with rapturous approval, not everyone agrees with it. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Go ahead and pray. It's okay. That's the word from the man at the top, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, announcing that houses of worship will now be allowed to hold in-person services, with certain restrictions. The announcement softens the government's hard stance prohibiting all religious gatherings, which medical experts identified as high risk for transmission of the infectious coronavirus. Ramaphosa said that faith trumped those concerns.
As a nation, we have a responsibility to respond to this aspect of the pandemic with as much effort and urgency as we have responded to the health crisis, and as we have acted to relieve the economic and social effects on our people. We have a responsibility to also take care of the spiritual, psychological, and emotional well-being of all South Africans.
Under the new regulations, houses of worship must keep facilities clean and sanitized, limit congregations to fewer than 50 people, and require participants to wear face masks and maintain social distancing. Bishop Malusi Mpulwana, General Secretary of the influential South African Council of Churches, told VOA that the group's member churches came up with the new guidelines, giving him the assurance that they can follow them. He said heads of member churches meet weekly, online, to discuss their anti-coronavirus strategy and want to include other faiths in their discussions. The bishop stressed that for millions of lower-income South Africans who don't have the means to watch virtual services, the physical structure is a lifeline.
For several months, including times of major festivals in their churches or in their mosques and synagogues, they've been unable to get in touch with their spirituality because it's a total shutdown. It is not appropriate to say that they can only be able to do that next year when we get to level one. What it has had to mean is that we need to now look at how differently to be church in COVID time, because COVID is not going away.
Fortunately, he said, churches are familiar with the challenges posed by plagues. To that end, the council plans to widen churches' range of social services, including academic support for students who have suffered from school closures. But not everyone believes this is a good idea. Rick Robenheimer is president of the South African Secular Society, a group of atheists, skeptics, and agnostics that, since the pandemic began, has met only virtually. They do not plan to resume actual meetings, although technically, he told VOA, they could argue that they qualify under the new rules.
We think it's a bad idea from several points of view. Firstly, the president has, to date, largely followed the science, and the science says that you need to practice social distancing, not have large gatherings, take precautions against transmission, and so on. And a lot of these would be very problematic in religious gatherings, which is why the prohibition on religious gatherings, just like any other recreational gathering, has been a good idea to date. He's now making an exception for a particular community, so he's in fact going against the Constitution, which says that there shall be no discrimination on the basis of religion or belief.
A legal challenge seems unlikely, as 80% of South Africans identify as Christian. Mpulwana said houses of worship now have to take the lead in showing how to live and thrive amid the coronavirus.
We are a society, and we are, as churches, a community that saves lives. we should not be and cannot be that this place of worship becomes a gateway to the grave. And for that reason, we will do everything we can, and we are encouraging everyone. The reason I wear a mask is not because I fear you will contaminate me. I wear a mask because I fear I might contaminate you, and I do not know if I'm a carrier or not. It is an act of love that I will not shake your hand. It is an act of love that I'll be distant from you. It is an act of love to make sure that all of us survive beyond this.
Ramaphosa has declared Sunday, May 31st, a national day of prayer across the Rainbow Nation. More than 520 South Africans have died of the virus since March. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
From next week, South Africans will again be able to buy alcohol after it was outlawed for more than 60 days during the lockdown that's still on because of the coronavirus. Government initially banned it, saying casualties from alcohol-related violence would fill hospitals and beds where needed for COVID-19 patients. However, the state is still refusing to permit cigarette sales. Critics and even supporters of the policy are asking why. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
Johan van Lochrenberg is a former police colonel and revenue service investigator. He and his colleagues spent a decade shutting down organized crime operations that were trading illegally in cigarettes. The project, codenamed Honey Badger, cost the criminals and their cohorts billions of rands. But in 2013, says van Lochrenberg, as then President Jacob Zuma began appointing his comrades to key tax authority positions, the accolades his unit had been receiving turned to animosity.
The revenue service was being heavily leaned on at the time by various go-betweens and politicians and politically connected people to let go of a certain matter that we were investigating.
Van Lochrenberg refused to let go. After his probe linked several high-ranking ANC ruling party members with crime syndicates dealing illicitly in tobacco products, he was fired, and the criminals began thriving once again.
Within a year, normal revenue inflow based on excise taxes originating from the tobacco industry just simply decreased, markedly so, which suggested an increase in the illicit trade that matched anything between 30 to 40% of the total market in South Africa.
The Treasury Department says the tobacco market is worth 30 billion rand a year. When South Africa's lockdown began in late March, the President's National Command Council, or NCC, which is in charge of policy around COVID-19, announced cigarettes would remain available, but cabinets speedily overturned the decision and the ban began. Professor Ivor Sarakinski is an expert in government policy at Fitz University.
Being cynical in this, you follow the money. Who benefits? And the beneficiaries are those who can sell their tobacco products outside of the legal framework. So if you're a retailer who stocks legally all the products, declares, pays tax, you can't sell, which means you've structured a market in favor of the illicit industry.
Price lists from illegal tobacco dealers are circulating around the country. Police seem oblivious to the crime. One of the most vociferous supporters of keeping the tobacco ban in place is Jacob Zuma's ex-wife, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, who is also a senior member of cabinet. She claims her only concern is people's health. But Sarakinski says it's very strange that some organizations very close to politicians, including Dlamini Zuma, suddenly started supporting the tobacco ban.
First the ANC Women's League, then the ANC Youth League, then the MK Veterans Association. What have they got to do with public health issues? And then the cabinet turns the NCC decision around. That means there's good grounds to suspect that there's behind the scenes influence peddling based on those people who benefit from the ban.
Dr. Keith Scott of the South African Drug Policy Initiative says the ANC is being disingenuous in saying it's acting in the interests of poor South Africans by officially banning cigarettes.
That was actually a very cruel move because it denied people who had an addiction to a very addictive drug. And if they couldn't get illegal cigarettes, they had to go through, you know, the withdrawal symptoms, whereas the wealthier people could stock up and obviously didn't have to go through that. So it wasn't actually a ban on smoking. It was a ban on poor people smoking. And
Scott says the prohibition has effectively forced an estimated 1 million poor smokers desperate for nicotine into the arms of illegal cigarette sellers who overcharge them.
When people who use drugs like tobacco and other drugs, when they're under stress, they tend to want more of that drug. The worst thing you can do for a person who has a substance use disorder is stress them. So that's going to make them irritable and go through all the withdrawal symptoms.
South Africa's tobacco war is set to come to a head soon when a group representing cigarette companies clashes with the government in court. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Around 40 people have been killed Monday and Tuesday in the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu and Ituri provinces. The French news agency AFP quotes UN sources as saying the blame goes to the notorious Allied Democratic Forces, ADF, a group located in eastern DRC. The group has been accused of killing hundreds of people in the region since late 2019 in apparent retaliation for military offensives against their bases. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yeyus Wuhib in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. Cameroonians are fleeing their villages in the northwestern part of the country after the military started building a base this week. South Africa has softened its coronavirus restrictions on houses of worship. And around 40 people have been killed this week in the DRC's North Kivu and Ituri provinces. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Zimbabwe nurses will not heed the government's call for them to return to normal working hours without salary increments. Rutendo Mawera reports from Harare.
Nurses at Zimbabwe public health institutions entered into a collective bargaining agreement with the government in 2018 to reduce their working week to 2 days due to low salaries and inadequate transport allowances. However, the cabinet has suspended the flexi hours agreement, saying more health staff are needed at hospitals as the country fights the coronavirus pandemic. In response, the Zimbabwe Nurses Association, ZINA, says the government cannot change the rules without addressing the health workers' challenges. ZINA President Enoch Dongo accused the government of making a unilateral decision without consulting them. He said without a better salary, they will not work full-time.
We don't have any problem going back to normal working hours, but the fundamentals has to be addressed first. Something that was preventing us, preventing workers to go to do normal working hours in December last year, in January this year, where there was no corona, it's not yet addressed. It's still there. So whether there's corona or there's no corona, the problem still there. It has to be addressed first so that we can have all health workers reporting to work full-time.
Dongo accused the government of hypocrisy.
It's insincere for government to say there is a pandemic, there is a disaster, just to go back. Because these are basic, the demands are basic that the health workers want. Otherwise, what we are noticing and seeing right now is a worsened situation, which was corona virus has worsened the situation more than even before.
The ZINA president also said having nurses working full-time will escalate the spread of the COVID-19 due to too many workers in hospitals at the same time.
COVID-19 is an infectious disease, very contagious, which can spread easily and us. With this current pronouncement, what it means is all the health workers should congest the hospitals. They have to report full time at work, meaning the chances of them getting the disease are very high, and also the chances of them spreading among themselves and the patients are very high, which can lead to a total collapse of the health delivery system in Zimbabwe.
Chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, ZADA, Fortune Nyamande, said while the fewer hours for nurses may disturb continuity of care for patients, nurses were justified to demand a living wage.
As much as we do not like the flex hours, we also want the nurses to be treated fairly, and they need to be given a decent salary, which allows them to come to work every day.
The health workers have also accused the government of failing to provide personal protective equipment like face masks and gloves for health workers on duty. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
The Ugandan government has resolved to evacuate thousands of Ugandans stranded in different countries following COVID-19 travel bans. However, the returnees must foot the cost of their transportation and quarantine. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The Uganda government has agreed to allow about 2,400 Uganda citizens spread across 66 countries to return home. They are among those stranded following the closure of airports as measures to stem the spread of COVID-19. Earlier, President Yoweri Museveni had insisted that Ugandans were to stay wherever they were, for fear of importing COVID-19. But after incessant calls and several meetings to discuss the return of the Ugandans, some will start returning by end of this week. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
We agreed that they will come back in phases because 2,400 coming back at once is not possible. Those who can afford can procure their air tickets, will register with the various embassies, and they will be linked to flights that are available coming this way that will be able to bring them. We are aware that Ethiopian Airlines is operating, and so it will be easier to evacuate them through Ethiopia.
The government says it lacks the finances to pay for the returns, and those who cannot foot their return costs will have to stay in the foreign countries. Henry Okello Oriem is Uganda's state minister for foreign affairs.
One thing Ugandans should appreciate, we have a very limited resources in which to bring Ugandans back abroad. So Ugandans have the responsibility of first paying if they want to come home immediately. I can assure you the will of government is there, the wish of government is there to bring back Ugandans. They're in stress. We cannot continue allowing them to stay out there indefinitely. We're seeing and means and ways in which to bring them back home.
Oriam says the government is in talks with other governments to extend visas for stranded Ugandans until the situation returns to normal. Oriam has asked the Ministry of Health to adequately prepare for testing and quarantining of the returnees.
Uganda now is suffering from cases of the COVID that is imported cases. So when they are bringing these Ugandans from abroad, Ministry of Health has to be really, really prepared and have all the quarantine in place, the testing kits in place, and other PPEs in place.
Ugandans in neighboring countries, however, might have to wait a little longer as government works out modalities for their return. Judith Nabakova is the information minister.
For those who are in the nearby countries and are planning to use the border areas, I think arrangements haven't been put in place yet because we need an elaborative plan of receiving them, quarantining them, and also having them tested in the respective border areas.
A number of African countries like Egypt, Kenya, and Rwanda have already evacuated their nationals stranded abroad. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyu Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, Thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.